The prophecy that Habakkuk, the prophet, received. Habakkuk's complaint. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. The Lord's answer, look at the nations and watch, and be utterly amazed. For I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people, who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are feared and dreaded people. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping to devour. They all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings and scoff at rulers. They laugh at all fortified cities. By building earthen ramps, they capture them. Then they sweep past like the wind and go on. Guilty people whose God is their God. Now I'll be handing over to Reverend Ying for the sermon.
Thanks, Eva. Fantastic. A very special welcome again that for those who've come and joined us back at physical service at CCC Milsons Point, and also for those who are joining us on Zoom. And if you're here for the very first time, a very special welcome. Now, Dan gave us some news, but there was one news that he actually overlooked. Dan, one news that you overlooked. Do you know what's so special about Friday? Dan handed in his very last assignment after 10 years. So Dan is now officially, was that right, Dan? Yep. Finished. And I know Joe's been, that's been waiting for 10 years, is that right? So anyone in Zoom, you give a hands clap, anyone here, Dan is finally finished. Now the real works begins. Congratulations, Dan. Did you pass? It may, no, he probably did. You get it. He might not have got an Asian pass, but he got a Western pass. Congratulations, Dan. Well, for those who have been with us for the last few weeks, we've been journeying through the letter of Peter, a letter which was written by one of Jesus' close friends, written to a group of Christians who were going through difficult times because there was a rising tide of anti-Christian sentiment. Well, we're going to actually jump back now to the older times, to the book of Habakkuk, and then we can share the screen. Can we share the screen? Is the screen being shared? I can't see it here on our screen here. Yes, thanks a lot. We're going back 600 years to the 7th century BC before Jesus' time, and we're looking at the prophet of Habakkuk. There's Habakkuk. Now, I don't know if you know, if you read the Old Testament, the Old Testament's categorized into three sections. There was known as the Law, which is the first five books of the Old Testament. There's a middle section called the Wisdom Literature, and then the section called the Prophets, right? And the Prophets actually were broken up into two categories, right? Here they are there. There are what is known as the Minor Prophets and the Major Prophets. Now, here's a test. I can't see people on Zoom, but at least I'll ask the people on physical, maybe the people on Zoom, and someone can shoot to me. Why were they called the minor prophets and why were they called the major prophets? Anyone know why were they called minor prophets? What's the distinction between major prophets and minor prophets? Yong, can you see the chat or not? Anyone want to hazard a guess? Jonan? Anyone on Zoom land put something? No?
Nothing yet.
No? Anyone have a guess at? Jono? What was it? Yeah. It is a simple reason they're called the minor prophets and the major prophets, simply because of the length. So you take, for instance, Isaiah, he was 66 chapters, but Habakkuk is only 3 chapters, right? So it's worthwhile, at least, you know, that's how the people have broken up the prophets. They were called the minor prophets and the major prophets, simply due to the length. It's not necessary in terms of importance. And I think that's one of the things that we need to be clear of, because we tend to read the major prophets and think they're more important than minor prophets. But I actually want to say that all the prophets are equally important. And Habakkuk, that we're going to look at for the next few weeks, it certainly has a very relevant message for us today. But the other question that's worthwhile asking is, why read the prophets? Why are the prophets so important? And I actually want to use the illustration that's well known to us, and that is Google Maps. Now, we all use Google Maps. As you know, there's Google Maps. If you want to go from anywhere to another place, you get on your Google Maps and it'll give you the roadmap there. But we also know about Street View, don't we? Street View, where you can go from place to place, but Street View views will give you the details of what the actual place looks like. And in fact, I actually think that might be a better way for those who want to go overseas traveling. Instead of the physical having to deal with coronavirus and visas and the cost and the heartache of traveling, just go on Street View. You can actually go all over the world and see what it looks like on Street View. And I actually want to use these two ideas of Google Maps and Street View as an illustration of how the Old Testament works. You see, when you go to the Old Testament, a large part of the Old Testament really traces the rise and the fall of the history of Israel. God works in the history, and he works in history, and works particularly in the history of Israel. And if you trace the Old Testament, what you see is the rise of the nation of Israel from just a group of Bedouin nomadic people. They rise, become a mighty slave nation, they escapes, they actually begin to conquer land, and the nation just rises from strength to strength to strength. But after a while, it begins a major, major decline. What you read in the Old Testament, to a large degree, a lot of the historical accounts, is like Google Maps. That is, it gives you the big picture, the roadmap, how things are working together. But Street View is, you could compare the prophets to something like Street View, because what the prophets do is really God asking you, let's go down to the street level. Let's go into the homes. Let's go into the bedrooms. Let's go into the family rooms. Let's go into the marketplace and see, let me show you what it's actually like on the ground. And what you see is God's constant criticism of what he actually sees on the ground. The immorality, the violence, the oppression, the perversion, the abuse that goes on. He says, go have a look at that. 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 So you can see that when you read many of the historical narratives like Kings and Chronicles and Samuel, it is a Google map. It is God taking you on a trip about what he's doing. But Street View goes on to the gory details of what is actually happening. So the question we're looking at Habakkuk, but who was Habakkuk? Well, Habakkuk, we don't know much about Habakkuk, but a few things we do know about Habakkuk. One, it's possibly that he was around the 7th century, during the rise of the mighty superpower known as the Babylonians. He was possibly preaching to the southern part of Israel, Judah. That's the southern. Think about Queensland and New South Wales, right? Judah was like New South Wales, and so the southern part, right? Judah. Habakkuk was probably preaching to that group, or writing this about that group of people. He was possibly a priest. How do we know that? Because if you look at the very last line of Habakkuk, it gives some instruction about how this song, the last song, should be sung. And therefore, people have thought maybe he's actually a priest of some sort. But beyond that, we really don't know much about Habakkuk. We don't know much. If you look, in contrast to all the other prophets, they talk about during the time and who they were. Habakkuk's a bit of an unknown guy. Well, that's Habakkuk. We don't know. But the second thing is, how does Habakkuk organize? And that's helpful for us to know. Habakkuk is a very simple book of three chapters, but the first two chapters really is about Habakkuk's complaint to God. He has two major complaints to God, two problems that he wants to take up with God, and then you also have God's response to Habakkuk's first complaint and God's response to Habakkuk's second complaint. That takes the first two chapters. The third chapter is basically in response to all that is Habakkuk's prayer to God. Okay, it's pretty simple. Two complaints, two answers, and one prayer. So when you read it, that will help you to know. But what is Habakkuk really about then? Well, it could be really, you could probably stylize in different ways. But one way I talked about it is trusting God in troubled times, or seeing the light in the midst of the darkness. Or another way of talking it, answering the question, how long, O Lord? Today, I want to look at this question of God's strange justice. And my simple message has basically three main points, three simple things, and one application from that. Okay, three main points. That's good. Yep, that's cool. Well, let's have a look at the first one. In the first point, in the face of injustice, God seems to be doing nothing. In the face of injustice, God seems to be doing nothing. That is to say, Habakkuk's first complaint is, God, you don't seem to care. You don't seem to do anything about what's going on. Have a listen to what Habakkuk's first complaint in chapter 1, verses 2 to 3. Have a look at what Habakkuk says. And I want you to feel, just not just listen, but feel Habakkuk's pain. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Feel that? Habakkuk's crying, Lord, how long? But you're not listening to me. I'm crying out to you, but your ears seem to be deaf. Or listen to what else he says. Or cry out to you violence, but you do not save. Feel Habakkuk's pain, which is astonishing because it's not just Habakkuk. That is the pain that people feel even today. Or listen to these words. Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate the wrong? Why do you do that? See, what Habakkuk's complaint to God, his first complaint, is there's so much injustice all around me. There's so much oppression, so much violence. I'm calling out to you, God, do something about it, but you're not doing anything about it. You don't seem to listen. You don't seem to care. That is my problem, God. What is the problem? Why aren't you answering? And listen further to what he says, okay? Have a look in verse 3. Destruction and violence before me, there is strife and conflict. Abounds, like the word abounds. It's just getting worse and worse and worse. Violence, oppression, conflicts, fighting, and they're just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Or look at these words. The law is paralyzed. Justice never prevails. That is to say that the law is useless. The law does nothing to save people. In fact, the law has become an institution for violence and justice. In fact, listen to these words here. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. Here again. You know, the wicked, the good people in the land just get it in the neck, so to speak. And so what we see, the law is useless, is what Habakkuk sees. The law courts have become a system of oppression and injustice. And we know all that, don't we? The good people get in the neck again and again and again, and there is no one to save them. And God doesn't seem to do anything to help the situation. Injustice, oppression is all over the planet. Everywhere you look, you see it. big and small. And we see it even all, and like I say, you have the situation where the bullies in the schoolyard or even in workplaces, they bully you, but here's the problem. They get away with it. They get away with it. Or you have situations of sexual harassment in the workplace. I just heard the radio the other day of a lady, of a worker, a female worker who was harassed sexually. And she said, no, she lost her job because of that. And you know what? People get away with it. Domestic violence. There's an inquiry about domestic royal commission into it. Again, it's so rife in our community. And the problem is the husbands get away with it. And it's not just even domestic violence, but even sexual abuse. I remember speaking to a woman many years ago. In her tears, she shared with me that when she was a 10-year-old girl, she was constantly raped 5 days a week by her dad. 5 days a week for 10 years. And she calls out to me, where was God in that? Where was God? We think about, you know, corrupt politicians who plunge their nation into poverty. And guess what? They get away with it. They get away with it. One person once said this, the world is an enormous injustice. And what's he saying? He's saying basically that injustice and oppression and violence is the landscape of our world. Every corner of the globe is just injustice and oppression. Not just big injustice, but like I said, the schoolyard bully, the sexual harassment at work, domestic violence, and so on and so forth. Of course, there have been people throughout ages and throughout the world that have tried to stop it. We can remember George Floyd, an untimely death by a white policeman, and it started off a massive protest march around the world. Black lives actually matters. But what has come of it? We think of the sort of protests in Hong Kong, fighting against oppression of Japanese China rule. What has come of it? Or we can think about the climate change forum just recently finishing up soon, I think. And the problem that climate change is you have the rich countries polluting our climate, and who in the end is going to pay and suffer for it? The poor third world countries. And what's worse still, you know, people have set up laws to no avail, started revolutions, set up organizations, protests, marches, unions, but all to no avail because the injustice and the oppression and the violence continues to march on and on and on. But you know what's worse still? The one person who could stop it, the one person who could put this to rest is God. But where is he? Where is he? This is Habakkuk's first complaint. In the face of injustice, God seems to be doing nothing. You see the great thing about Habakkuk, he feels, it's not that we feel his pain. This is 2,500 years earlier. He writes about what he sees, and you know what? It's so relevant to us today, isn't it? His pain is our pain. His cry is our cry, not just here, but right around the world. Which leads me to my second point. And what is the second point? That God will bring justice. He will bring justice, but in a way you will not believe. Have a look what he says here in verse 5. Look at the nations and watch. and be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to do something. I've heard you, Habakkuk. I hear your cry, I hear your pain, I know what it feels like. I'm going to do something about it. But here's the deal. I'm going to do something in a way that you're just not going to believe it. You are truly not going to believe it. And what's he going to do? Well, have a look at verse 6. It follows. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. What's he doing? I'm raising up the Babylonians. And notice what they will do, this Babylonian nation. They all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind that's unstoppable and gathers prisoners like sand. In verse 11, we read these words, then they sweep past like the wind and go on, guilty people whose own strength is their God. So what is God going to do about the injustice and violence? What is he doing? He's raising up the Babylonians. They are the instruments of his punishment and the instruments who exact his justice. Now, I want you to pause for a moment and think just how crazy that is. Do you know anything about the Babylonian Empire? The Babylonians at that time was the superpower of the world. It was the superpower. They were big, but they were not just big. I mean, they were like China, United States. They're just big, right? But they were not just big. They were brutal. They were a ruthless nation. Notice how God describes them. In verse 6 again, I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous nation. Look at verse 7. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. What is God saying? The Babylonians are superpower, the instrument of my justice. They were not a nation of angels. They did not fear God. If anything, they were violent, they were brutal. They were a wicked nation. In fact, the Bible describes the Babylonians as a very symbol of wickedness in the world. Now, how crazy is that? How crazy is that? Let's try and fast forward what Habakkuk was here today. Imagine today's situation that we are, say, in Israel today, right? Or maybe some parts of the world. And he sees the corruption in the streets. He sees the violence, the oppression. He sees the law courts that are paralyzed. He sees the fact that the right good people just get in there and there's no one to save them. And what would you do? You cry out to God, why don't you do something about this? And God says, okay, I will. I'm going to do something about that. You know what I'm doing? You're not going to believe it. I'm going to do something so crazy to deal with the injustice, but you're not going to believe it. You know what God's going to answer that? This is what God does. You know what he's going to do? I'm going to raise up the Nazi Germans. Now, how crazy is that? That's what God's going to do. I'm going to raise up this wicked, this brutal, this ruthless nation, and they will become the instruments of my justice to punish wickedness. Crazy, isn't it? You can't hard to believe. This is why God says here, look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days. What? And he says, that you would not believe even if you were told. That's why God says, you just don't believe it, do you? It's so mad. It is so bad. And yet that's what God says I'm going to do. That's how I'm going to actually sort out the injustice in this world. Now, I want you to pause for a moment and just ponder that, right? Remember that saying? The saying here. The world is an enormous injustice. Here's my problem, or maybe here's Habakkuk's problem, or here's our problem. How do you deal with injustice and oppression and violence in a world with filled with injustice, oppression, and violence? How do you deal with injustice when all around you is just injustice? How do you deal with violence when all around you is just violence upon violence upon violence? What do you do? How do you deal with wickedness when all around you is just wickedness? You know what you do? What God's answer is? It's very simple. I will deal with wickedness in that nation by raising another wicked nation against this wicked nation. What? What are you going to do about that nation? Well, I'm going to raise up another wicked nation to deal with that wicked nation. And then I'm going to raise up another wicked nation to deal with that wicked nation. Then I'm going to raise up another wicked nation and deal with that wicked nation. I will use wickedness to deal with wickedness. I will punish wickedness with wickedness to bring about justice. You see, this explains. Now, this is actually traced to the Old Testament. This is how it seems to operate. God looked at how Israel, how bad Israel was getting. And you know what he sees in the book of Isaiah, one of the major prophets? God says, I'm going, you know what? You're so bad. I'm going to raise up the Assyrians, that wicked nation, and I'm going to send them to basically punish you. And then God has a word to the Assyrians. That was the other superpower before the Babylon. You know, you Assyrians are so bad. I'm going to raise up the Babylonians to punish you, Assyrians. And then you read the book of Isaiah again. God says to the Babylonians, you guys are so wicked and so bad. I'm going to raise up, you know what, the Persians to punish you. Then he has a word to the Persians. You know, the Persians are so bad. I'm going to raise up the Greeks to punish you. And on and on and on and on it goes. That explains why there's so much war in the world. Because God is using wicked nations to punish other wicked nations as an instrument and exacting of his own justice. It's crazy, it's hard to believe. But that's why that second point is so important to take note. God will bring about justice. He's not sitting on the sideline doing nothing and sipping his orange juice. God is actually actively in the work, bringing justice in the world, but in a way that you will not believe. It's crazy, isn't it? This comes to my third point. God will one day bring justice in a way that is clear to all. He will one day bring justice in a way that is clear to all. This is what the famous Mahatma Gandhi once said, make injustice invisible. Now, why would he say that? It's a lovely quote, isn't it? Three words, it's a lovely quote. But why does he say that? Because all he sees is what we see, injustice. Injustice all around him. So his passion, his desire is one day, you know, his hope is to make injustice invisible. And why does he say that? Because he cannot see God's justice at work. He cannot see what God is saying to Habakkuk because he doesn't believe it. Habakkuk, God said, you're not going to believe it. Well, Gandhi seemed to believe this, right? But what is the promise of God? God's promise is that one day he will make justice visible. One day it will be visible. His justice now is invisible. He's working behind the scenes. But one day he will make it visible. In fact, he will do one better than Gandhi. Because you know what he's going to say? He says, I will make justice visible. You think about the difference between Gandhi and God. It's a big difference, obviously. Gandhi could come up with a nice saying, make justice, injustice invisible. Well, that's nice. How are we going to do that? You come up with nice words and memes and something like that. Well, that nice makes people feel good. It's never going to happen, Gandhi. It's not going to happen. And God says, I'm going to do one better. I will make it happen. I will make justice visible. And how's he going to do that? Well, let's fast forward to the New Testament. There's a sermon, Acts chapter 17, is a part of a sermon which Paul, who you know is a major writer of the New Testament, he was giving a sermon to a bunch of Greek philosophers in the city of Athens in the first century. At the conclusion of the sermon, this is what he says. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. What is his promise? The promise here is that one day justice will be made visible. One day everyone, great and small, living and the dead, will be brought to justice visibly. Because it says here, all men will be judged justly. And how do we know that? Well, because he set a day. He set the day. And I think about it, right? Just say, okay, let's go out for coffee. Okay, how are you? Let's go out for coffee one day. Say, great. Okay. Is it going to happen? Well, you know, it's a dream, a hope. But if I said, how are you? Okay, how are you? Let's make a date for coffee. 12th of December, 10 o'clock, 2022. Okay? Okay, it's a year, but it's in the calendar. It's in the diary. It's always the case when you say, let's catch up, let's do this. Fine. When? When is the problem? Once you say you put it in the diary, you know it's going to happen. God in the Old Testament has been saying there's going to be a day of judgment, that day when justice will be made visible. What Paul's saying here, it's going to happen. How do I know it's going to happen? Because God has set the date. It's in his diary. This is the day. He hasn't told us, but he's put it in his diary that it's going to happen. And how else is he going to do that? But notice what else he said. He's going to judge the world with justice by who? By the man he has appointed. Who's that man? Jesus. You know, the problem with Gandhi, good night, good great meme, he can't make it happen. God has appointed Jesus to be that judge. God has appointed Jesus to make justice visible, because he's the one who's going to judge all men. When people talk, are you ready to meet your maker? His name is Jesus. And how do we know that Jesus is it? Well, look at what it says. He has given proof of this. Proof, how? By raising him from the dead. It raises the question, why is Jesus the most qualified person to be able to judge the whole world justice? And you know what? Not only is he God himself, but he is a God who's not only seen all the injustice in the world, he personally has felt the pain of injustice. He has personally felt it. You and I often will never feel in the injustice because we're sheltered enough. He was never sheltered from the injustice. He felt it personally. He was the victim of all the injustice in the world. He himself was unjustly treated. The innocent man being crucified unfairly. And yet, what do we read? He overcame it by rising from the dead. And in rising from the dead, God is placed in a position of authority to judge all the world. And he will judge. And because he's seen it, he's experienced, he's felt it, then he will actually judge justly. He will judge all people justly. Like I said, Gandhi could come up with a nice meme. Jesus has personally experienced it, was the victim of it, of all the injustice, and he himself will make justice visible. And that's why you come up that third point. One day, God will bring justice in a way that is clear for all to see. Well, 3 points then. In the face of injustice, God seems to be doing nothing. That's Habakkuk's cry. And God's response is that God will bring justice in a way you will not believe. But third point is God one day will bring justice in a way that is clear to all. But what's the application there? And I want to actually say two simple points. One, let's be realistic. We live in a world filled with injustice, violence, and oppression. And if you are honest with yourself, you're going to feel the pain of this world. No doubt you yourself will feel it in small ways. But if you have eyes open, you'll feel it, and you should weep for the injustice and the violence and the oppression. You will probably weep for your own sense of injustice that's been done against you. We weep. That's the reality of living in a wicked world. But at the same time, we rejoice. Why? We rejoice because we know one day justice will be made visible. We rejoice one day because we know that God will actually bring justice, judge all people justly. No longer a hidden thing, but a clear thing. We rejoice because God has set the day. We rejoice because he has appointed a judge. He's not just come up with nice sayings, but will actually make it happen. We rejoice because we know Jesus will judge the world justly. We rejoice. But that raises one last question for us to question. Where do you stand before God? Because if there is a day in where God will make justice visible, where do you stand? Where do you stand? Will you be on the wrong side of justice, or will you be on the right side of justice before the judge, Jesus? Let me close. Father, we see the injustice all around us, big and small. We see violence. We see oppression. We see people getting away with it. But Lord, from your word here, you tell us that you're already doing, exacting justice, but in a way that's so hard to believe. You're punishing people for their wickedness, even now, all over the world. But it's still hard to believe. But you've promised to us one day you will make justice visible. One day you will make it so clear, so unmistakably obvious. And we give you thanks that we look forward to the day which you have set in your diary, that you will make justice visible through your Son, the Lord Jesus. And we long for that day. In Jesus' name, amen.